Tissasak and her husband Nangus came back into the valley, and they walked along the trail. And Tissasak began to get real thirsty, and so she walked ahead of Nangus, and then she saw this big lake of water. So she ran to the lake and she drank it all up. And then Nangus came behind her, and he was looking for water. He couldn't find any, so he began.
Those were the first words of a Yosemite Miwok story, The Legend of Tissasak. I heard it here at the Yosemite Valley Visitor Center, which is right in the middle of the valley floor. I'm Sarah Wood, and I'm here looking at the exhibits and talking to people. The Visitor Center is a state-of-the-art place that teaches you tons about the park's geology, ecology, the human history, and the flora and fauna, while you're enjoying yourself with all the hands-on exhibits.
Hi, I'm Mary Klein.
I started out meeting with one of the people who works here.
And I'm the branch chief of interpretive support services, which means that I work on designing and producing exhibits, videos, and waysides about the park.
It was around 2004 that Mary Klein and others started meeting to figure out how to refurbish the decades-old visitor center. They held workshops to develop the most meaningful content for the exhibit hall.
And in the workshops, people would tell us, you know, oh, you have to cover air quality, you have to cover bears, you have to cover geology.
Considering that Yosemite's history began millions of years ago and keeps being recreated every day,
any single one of those topics would have taken up the entire space of the visitor center.
How could they choose what to focus on?
So it became a question of what was the most important story to tell.
Mary and her colleagues looked at the old visitor center exhibits and thought about how to make them more relevant.
So going from minimal exhibits to a really interactive hall that would be appropriate for families and children, would be accessible to all people, and would also be translatable for international visitors. So a lot of visual information on the walls as well.
One of the first things to be overhauled was this enormous 3D model of Yosemite Valley. You practically bump into it when you walk in. Eric Knight is a sculptor and climber, and he was living in Yosemite and waiting tables at the time. So, he saw an opportunity.
I came to them. I had had formal training in geography and in cartography, but I didn't translate that into an actual job until I walked into Mary Klein's office and started badgering the Park Service about giving me some opportunities to show what I could do.
Eric spent weeks repairing and repainting the model, so naturally he wanted to protect it from visitors. But that lasted about a minute.
Well, we actually tried to put signs on the thing that said, "Do not touch." As it happens, though, people walk in, it's at hand level. The first thing they do is lean on it, look right past the sign, and, you know, it's a hopeless cause. So I sort of swiftly realized that those signs needed to go and that we were going to need to bow to, just let people touch the thing.
And that gave us the idea, while we have a tactile map, that we can let people touch and feel and get a feel for the size of the landscape. And from that grew the idea that everything should be tactile and completely accessible.
In fact, the Park Service has just finished a tour for visually impaired visitors. And these ramps make it easy for people in wheelchairs to get around. Here in the exhibit hall, I find this couple. They're studying how glaciers carved and polished Yosemite's granite surfaces.
So if I could just have you two introduce yourselves.
Sure. Okay, well, my name is Gordon Leftenant. I live in Kenmore, Washington, in the Seattle area, and I've been here for a week visiting Yosemite.
And my name's Teresa Leftenant. Same area, yes. We're married. We're here together.
What is it like?
The Visitor Center does such a great job of starting at the very beginning and saying, okay, all the volcanic activity that pushed this huge, massive rock up.
You know, it's the geomorphology that really fascinates me.
And then glaciers formed it, and that's what created this amazing spot. And, you know, you don't really realize we have such beauty in America sometimes. We forget.
And that's why I like the Visitor Center. It really does a great job of demonstrating exactly how this beautiful land was created through the forces of the earth, as well as the superficial forces of climate and water.
In another part of the exhibit, I tag along with Teresa Daly and her brother Frank.
I come to the Visitor Center every time I come to the park. I love the exhibits. I love looking at the books. I love looking at the maps. It's always just part of my park experience.
I happen to be more interested in the sort of the more modern times, the heritage of the park in the last 100 years or so, as it's developed into a tourist commercial activity in a positive way, you know, without being overrun or there's a sense of stewardship that it's nice to see ever increasing. So it's wonderful.
I think it's a wonderful place. It's a gift for people to be able to come in here and learn so much. I can spend an hour in here easily.
We actually designed the visitor center for three groups of people: streakers, strollers, and studiers. So if you streak through, you're still going to see enough on the murals and the photos to give you an idea of the formation of the park and all of its history. And if you stroll through, you can sort of focus on whatever you're particularly interested in. And if you're a studier, you can probably spend the whole day there.
I would consider myself in the last group. And as I walk around, learning about granite uplift,
the different levels of crystallization in the rock,
where the water comes from that fills these waterfalls,
glacial sculpting,
the volcanic activity, the
fire ecology,
how did the cliff get so steep,
black bears, Indian dwellings, and John Muir's hang nest, I find myself thinking about how the visitor center isn't just a great destination by itself. It's also a gateway to all the human activities in the park. Photographs on the visitor center walls remind me that Ansel Adams spent a lifetime coming here, shooting the park in every mood. Early on, he photographed a quiet spot on the Lyell Fork of the Merced River. His son Michael remembers.
This was one of the first places that he really experienced in the Sierra as early as 1920, 1921, and it was just a beautiful meadow, a beautiful stream, wonderful mountains, and he just felt at home at this location.
And Half Dome was the site of Adams' greatest breakthrough as a photographer.
Ansel took a picture, this monolith, and he wasn't satisfied with the image as he thought about it, and he had one glass plate left. So he repeated the picture with a red filter, which darkened the sky. And when he went home that night and developed the plate, he recognized that he knew what he wanted and he got exactly what he had previously visualized.
On another wall in the visitor center, I come across images of rock climbers. Yosemite is a rock climber's paradise, so I set off to find a real live climber.
This is Hans Florian here, and I'm telling you about the recent climb I did up El Capitan, the nose route, which is the south buttress. It's in the middle of that huge granite face. And my partner Yuji Hirayama and myself climbed this in the fastest time that we know of, which is 2 hours, 37 minutes, and 5 seconds.
We talked just after Hans and Yuji beat their own speed climbing record in 2008.
And we did it on a crisp, cool fall morning, October 12th. Just incredible conditions for climbing. You want it to be just cool enough so that you're not sweating when you're holding onto the rock, and you want it to be warm enough so that you can go in t-shirts and shorts.
Can you kind of describe what it feels like as you're feeling your way up?
Just for myself, touching the granite, there's all sorts of, I guess, tactile experiences, because there's crack climbing where you're using the back of your hands in the crack. Obviously, other times you're holding an edge like the top of a door molding or something, where your fingertips are touching, and that's a different feeling.
Speed climbers like Hans Florian don't bivouac or sleep on a rock face like other climbers do. Remember sculpture climber Eric Knight?
When people like me climb the nose, it takes a lot longer than when Hans Florian climbs the nose. It involves carrying a lot of supplies, and it involves many nights on the wall, usually, you know, between 3 and 5 nights even. One of our favorite parts of doing El Cap routes is the bivvies. I mean, it's fun. You have all your stuff up there. You have your little bit of, you know, whiskey or whatever you've got. You get a long-awaited sip of water. You get your can of chili. And it's just a great chance to kick back up there and look at the view. And you're tired like you've never been in your life. It's wonderful. And people ask if you sleep well up there. You sleep the sleep of the dead.
After talking to these climbers, I sort of want to try rock climbing myself. But first, I'll spend more time at the visitor center, touch the granite samples, learn the ecosystems, and try to appease the park's ruling spirits by learning the history of this incredible place. It's the best way to really grasp how interconnected everything is.
It's a very complex park, and there are so many stories here that I would find it hard to think of a person who couldn't find a story of interest in Yosemite or a connection to their own past or to their own experiences.
So make sure the Yosemite Valley Visitor Center is a part of your experience. It'll answer a lot of your questions, whether you visit at the beginning or the end of your stay. Thanks for joining me. This has been an Antenna Audio production.